A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been shooting video on his Android phone, and he's running into the classic variable frame rate headache. You import clips into an editor, and suddenly, you're getting that dreaded message about transcoding everything before you can even start cutting. Files balloon in size. The whole quick edit workflow goes out the window. He's asking three things. One, is there a simple way to standardize frame rate on clips after the fact? 2. Can you actually predict whether your phone will hold a consistent frame rate during a shoot? And 3. For most people, is shooting raw video on a phone actually worth it? Or is it one of those features that sounds amazing until you try to use it?
The VFR problem is one of those things where the entire smartphone industry just sort of shrugged and said, close enough. And video editors have been paying for it ever since. Here's what's actually happening under the hood. When your phone records video, it's constantly making micro adjustments. If the processor gets warm, it drops a frame. If the light changes and the exposure algorithm recalculates, it might stretch a frame slightly longer. The result is a file that says it's 30 frames per second, but some frames last 33 milliseconds, others last 31, and a few might drift to 35. The timeline inside the file isn't a metronome, it's jazz.
The musical equivalent of a drummer who's technically keeping tempo, but only if you average it out over the whole song.
And most video editors are built around constant frame rate, or CFR. Every frame is exactly the same duration. The timeline is a rigid grid. When you drop VFR footage onto a CFR timeline, the editor has to reconcile those drifting timestamps. Different editors handle this with varying degrees of grace. DaVinci Resolve will often just refuse to play ball. Premiere Pro might let you edit, but the audio will drift out of sync, which is arguably worse because you don't notice until you're 20 minutes into a cut.
Nothing like discovering your interview subject's lips have wandered off to a completely different sentence.
That's the nightmare scenario. So to the first question, is there a simple way to standardize? The answer is yes, and the tool you want is FFmpeg. It's a command-line Swiss Army knife for video processing, and it's been the standard answer to this problem for years. The basic command is something like ffmpeg iinput.mp4r30cc vlibs264 preset ultrafast creset ultrafast creef18 output. That takes your variable frame rate clip and re-encodes it to a locked 30 frames per second.
For the listener who just heard command line and felt their soul leave their body,
there are graphical front ends. Handbrake is probably the most accessible. It's free, it runs on everything, and it has a constant frame rate checkbox right in the video settings. You load your clip, check that box, set your target frame rate, and hit encode. It's not quite as fast as a tuned FFmpeg command, but it's a single button press. Shutter Encoder is another good one. It wraps FFmpeg in a cleaner interface and gives you more control than Handbrake without needing to touch a terminal.
Both of those are still re-encoding, which means you're generating new files that are potentially larger than the originals. That was part of the complaint.
Right, and that's the trade-off. The file gets bigger because you're decompressing the original and recompressing it, and to maintain quality during that round trip, you typically use a higher bitrate than the original. The phone already compressed the video once. Now you're decompressing, normalizing the frame timing, and compressing again. It's generational loss, even if it's subtle at high enough settings.
The simple solution is simple in the sense that brain surgery is simple. Conceptually straightforward, but you're still opening up the patient.
There's a better approach, but it requires planning ahead. If you're on Android and you're serious about getting clean footage, you want to use an app that can force constant frame rate at the recording stage. The stock camera app on most phones won't do this. It's optimized for getting a usable clip in any condition, not for editorial cleanliness.
Which brings us to the second question. Can you predict whether your phone will actually hold frame rate? What does the app landscape look like for locking things down?
There are a few apps that genuinely try to solve this. Motion Cam Pro is the one that comes up most often in serious discussions. It can record direct to constant frame rate, and it gives you real-time feedback on frame drops. If a frame drops, it logs it. You know before you even leave the shoot whether the clip is clean. Mate Pro 2 4fps is another, the name is a mouthful, but it's built specifically for frame rate accuracy on Android. It'll show you a live readout of actual frame timing versus target.
That sounds like a password I'd generate and immediately forget.
It's not winning any branding awards, but the functionality is solid. Both of those apps bypass a lot of the Android camera stack that introduces variability. The stock camera pipeline on Android involves multiple processing stages: noise reduction, tone mapping, stabilization, and each one can introduce timing jitter. These pro apps tap into the Camera 2 API at a lower level and take more direct control.
The answer to "can I predict frame rate?" is basically, you can, but only if you're using an app that tells you what's happening in real time and you're monitoring it during the shoot. It's not something you can just trust the phone to handle on its own.
Battery level is a real factor, but it's not as simple as above 20% you're fine. The issue is thermal throttling. When your phone gets hot, the system on chip reduces clock speed to avoid damage. That directly impacts the camera pipeline's ability to process frames on schedule. A phone at 40% battery that's been recording 4K for 15 minutes in direct sunlight is going to drop frames. A phone at 10% battery that's cool and just started recording might be fine.
It's temperature, not charge percentage. That's the real predictor.
And ambient temperature matters enormously. Shooting outdoors in summer, your phone is going to thermal throttle faster than in an air-conditioned room. Some of the pro camera apps will show you the system on-chip temperature in real time, which is useful. If you see it creeping above 40 degrees Celsius, you're entering the danger zone for frame drops.
This is the kind of information that makes you want to pack an ice pack in your camera bag, which I assume someone on a YouTube tutorial has already recommended.
People stick their phones on cold packs between takes. It's ridiculous, and it works.
Of course there are.
There's one more factor worth mentioning. The codec matters. Phones typically record in H.264 or H.265 using hardware encoders built into the chip. Those hardware encoders are fast and power efficient, but they're not always frame rate accurate under load. Some of the pro camera apps let you switch to software encoding, which is slower and burns more battery, but produces much more consistent frame timing. It's a trade-off.
You're trading battery life for temporal precision, which feels like the kind of deal you make when you've been burned by VFR footage one too many times, and you're willing to pay any price to never see that transcoding dialogue again.
That transcoding dialogue is the video editor's version of a check engine light. You see it, and your whole day gets worse.
All right, let's talk about raw video. This is the third question, and it's one where I suspect the answer starts with, well, it depends, and then rapidly becomes no.
The short answer is that for most users, raw video on a phone is not worth it. But the why is interesting, and it gets at something fundamental about how phone cameras work versus dedicated cameras.
Walk me through it.
When your phone records standard video, it's doing an enormous amount of processing in real time. The sensor captures raw data, but before that data becomes a video file, it goes through a pipeline that includes debayering, noise reduction, sharpening, tone mapping, color correction, and compression. All of that happens in milliseconds, and the result is a video that looks finished right out of the camera. That's the phone's entire value proposition: computational photography applied to video.
The phone is basically a mini post-production house that works faster than you can blink.
Raw video bypasses almost all of that. You're getting the sensor data with minimal processing. The file contains the actual luminance values from each photo site before they're interpolated into full-color pixels. The promise is that you get more latitude for color grading and exposure adjustment in post. And that promise is real. A raw video file gives you dramatically more flexibility than a compressed H. The files are enormous. We're talking gigabytes per minute for 4K RAW. A 10-minute clip can easily be 50 or 60 gigabytes. Your phone's storage evaporates. And then you have to actually edit that footage, which requires a computer with serious horsepower. You can't just drop raw video into a phone editing app and expect it to work smoothly.
You're creating a workflow problem that most people don't have the hardware to solve, in exchange for flexibility they probably don't need.
There's a deeper issue. Phone sensors are tiny. The individual photosites are minuscule compared to even a Micro Four Thirds sensor, let alone full frame. That means each photosite captures very little light, which means the signal-to-noise ratio is inherently worse. Raw video on a phone reveals just how much noise is actually in the sensor data before the computational photography stack cleans it up. You're seeing the sensor naked, and phone sensors are not pretty naked.
Like adopting a feral cat.
That's not the analogy I would have reached for, but I can't say you're wrong.
The phone's processing isn't just convenient, it's compensatory. It's hiding the sensor's limitations.
The computational pipeline on a modern phone is doing impressive work. Apple's ProRes and ProRes RAW on iPhone are interesting counterexamples, but even there, ProRes is still partially processed. It's not raw sensor data in the way Cinema DNG or Blackmagic RAW is. And the file sizes are still punishing.
What about on Android specifically? There are apps that offer RAW video now.
MotionCam Pro supports Cinema DNG and a RAW format they call DirectLog. Mac Pro 2.4 FPS supports various RAW outputs. The results can be impressive in controlled conditions. Good lighting, static subjects, a tripod. But the moment you introduce motion or less than ideal light, the limitations of the sensor become obvious. Noise patterns that the phone's processing would normally clean up are baked into the file. You can fix some of it in post with noise reduction software, but now you're adding another step to a workflow that was already heavy.
Who is raw phone video actually for?
Two groups, I think. One is people who are shooting footage that will be intercut with footage from dedicated cinema cameras and need maximum grading flexibility to match the look. If you're doing a documentary and your A camera is an ARRI and your B camera is a phone, shooting RAW on the phone gives your colorist a fighting chance at matching them.
That's a very specific person.
The second group is people who are curious about the technology and want to experiment. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're asking, should most users shoot RAW, the answer is no. The storage cost, the editing complexity, and the marginal benefit over well-exposed standard video make it a bad trade-off for the vast majority of situations.
Let's circle back to the frame rate standardization question, because I think there's a workflow solution we haven't fully spelled out. If someone has a pile of VFR clips, and they want to edit quickly without generating massive transcoded files, what's the actual step-by-step?
The cleanest approach is what's called a mezzanine workflow. You take your VFR source clips, transcode them once to a constant frame rate in an editing-friendly intermediate codec like ProRes or DNxHR, and then you edit from those. The intermediate files are large, yes, but they're optimized for editing performance. Scrubbing through a ProRes file is butter smooth compared to scrubbing through H, and when you're done editing, you can archive the intermediates or delete them and keep just the source clips and the project file.
You're front-loading the pain. One big transcode session instead of constant fighting with the editor.
And FFmpeg can batch process an entire folder of clips with a single command. You point it at a directory, tell it to convert everything to ProRes at your target frame rate, and walk away. Come back in an hour and you have a clean media pool.
For someone who doesn't want to touch the command line, Handbrake can batch process too, right?
You set up your preset once, add all the clips to the queue, and let it run. The key setting is the frame rate option. You want constant frame rate and you want to pick the frame rate that matches what you intended to shoot. If you were aiming for 30 frames per second, set it to 30. If you were shooting slow motion at 60, set it to 60. Don't try to convert frame rates unless you have a specific creative reason to do so.
What about the concern that the transcoded files are significantly larger? Is there a way to keep them manageable?
There's a trade-off between file size and editing performance. ProRes LT or ProRes Proxy are lighter weight flavors of ProRes that still edit smoothly. DNxHR LB, which stands for low bandwidth, is Avid's equivalent. These aren't tiny files. They're still bigger than the H.264 originals, but they're a lot smaller than ProRes 422 HQ. For most phone footage, you don't need the highest quality intermediate. The source material doesn't have enough detail to justify it.
That's a point worth underlining. People hear intermediate codec and assume they need the highest quality setting, but phone footage is already compressed. You're not preserving detail that isn't there.
You're just giving yourself a clean editing experience. ProRes Proxy at 4K is about 150 megabits per second. That's roughly a gigabyte per minute, manageable on a modern external drive.
Let me ask you something about the prediction side. If someone is using one of these pro camera apps and monitoring frame rate in real time, what's the actual threshold where they should stop and let the phone cool down? Is it one drop frame and you're done? Or is there some tolerance?
One or two drop frames in a long clip is usually not a disaster. Most editors will handle that fine, especially if the drop happens during a moment that's easy to cut around. The problem is when the frame rate is consistently unstable, drifting between 28 and 32 frames per second throughout the clip. That's when audio sync becomes a nightmare and the editor starts throwing errors.
You're looking for consistency, not perfection.
And the pro apps will typically show you a graph or a live counter of actual versus target frame rate. If you see it fluctuating by more than about half a frame per second, you're going to have issues in post. If it's rock solid at 30 with an occasional blip, you're probably fine.
What about the audio side of this? When frame rate drifts, does the audio stay consistent or does it drift too?
This is actually one of the most frustrating parts of the VFR problem. The audio is typically recorded at a constant sample rate, 48 kHz is standard for video. The audio clock and the video clock on a phone are not always perfectly synchronized, and when the video frame rate varies, the relationship between audio samples and video frames gets complicated. Some phones handle this better than others. iPhones have historically been better about audio-video sync than most Android phones, though the gap has narrowed.
Even if you fix the frame rate in post, you might still have sync issues if the original recording had clock drift between audio and video.
And that's a harder problem to solve. FFmpeg can adjust audio timing to match video, but you have to know the offset. Some editors will auto-detect the drift and compensate, but it's not universal. This is another reason why getting it right at the recording stage is so valuable.
We've been talking about this from the perspective of someone who's already committed to phone video, but I want to zoom out for a second. If someone is hitting these problems repeatedly, VFR, transcoding, file sizes, thermal throttling, at what point does it make more sense to just buy a dedicated camera?
That's the question lurking behind this whole discussion, isn't it? The answer depends on what you're shooting and why. If you're doing quick social media content where turnaround speed matters more than technical perfection, the phone is still the right tool. The VFR issues only really bite you when you're doing multi-clip edits with precise timing.
If you're doing that, multi-clip edits, interviews, anything with sync audio, then a dedicated camera starts looking less like a luxury and more like a time-saving device.
A used Panasonic GH5 or Sony A6400 costs a few hundred dollars now and will give you rock-solid constant frame rate, better low-light performance, and interchangeable lenses. The files drop into any editor without complaint. You spend zero time transcoding or fixing frame rate issues. Over the course of a year of regular shooting, that time savings alone justifies the cost.
Yet people keep reaching for their phones, because the phone is always there. The best camera is the one you have with you, and so on.
That maxim has done more to normalize VFR footage than any other single factor. It's true, but it's also a cope. The phone is the best camera you have with you until you've spent an afternoon transcoding clips, and then you start wondering if maybe you could have brought the real camera after all.
There's a middle ground we haven't mentioned, which is using the phone as a camera, but with external recording. Some of these pro apps can output a clean HDMI signal, and you can record to an external monitor recorder, like an Atomos Ninja. That bypasses the phone's internal encoding entirely.
That's a good solution if you're willing to carry the extra gear. The Atomos records to ProRes or DNxHR directly, constant frame rate, no transcoding needed. You're using the phone's sensor and lenses, but none of its compression pipeline. The downside is that you're now carrying a monitor, a battery, cables, and a mount. At that point, you're basically building a cinema rig around a phone, and the size advantage evaporates.
The phone stops being a phone and becomes the world's thinnest camera frame.
An expensive one, at that. A flagship phone costs as much as a very capable dedicated camera. If you're going to strap it to a monitor and external battery, you might ask yourself why you're not just using a camera designed for that workflow.
Alright, let's get back to RAW for a moment. You mentioned Cinema DNG and DirectLog. For someone who does want to experiment with RAW on Android, what's the least painful way to dip a toe in?
MotionCam Pro with DirectLog is probably the gentlest introduction. DirectLog is a log-encoded format that's technically not pure RAW, but it preserves a lot of the dynamic range while keeping file sizes more manageable. It's sort of RAW adjacent. You get more grading flexibility than standard video without the full terabyte-filling insanity of Cinema DNG.
What does the grading workflow actually look like for that?
You'd bring the clips into DaVinci Resolve, which has become the standard for color work. Resolve can read DirectLog and apply a color space transform to get it into a usable starting point. From there, you adjust exposure, contrast, saturation, the usual color grading moves. The difference is that you have more room to push and pull before the image breaks apart. With standard phone video, if you try to lift the shadows more than a stop or two, you get banding and noise. With log or raw, you might get 3 or 4 stops of latitude.
Which sounds great until you remember that you're still working with a phone sensor that has baked in noise characteristics. The latitude is real, but the floor is higher.
The noise floor on a phone sensor is just objectively higher than on a larger sensor. You can't physics your way out of that. What you can do is expose carefully. With RAW or log, you typically want to expose to the right. Push the exposure as high as you can without clipping highlights, and then bring it down in post. That maximizes the signal relative to the noise. It's a technique that works on any sensor, but it's especially important on tiny sensors where every photon counts.
Expose to the right. This is one of those phrases that sounds like political advice.
It's the one piece of political advice I'll give on this show.
So, to pull all of this together for someone who just wants their phone footage to not be a nightmare in the edit, use a pro camera app that shows real-time frame rate, monitor it during the shoot, keep the phone cool, and if you still end up with VFR clips, batch transcode them to ProRes Proxy or DNxHR-LB before editing. RAW is not for you unless you have a specific reason and a lot of hard drive space.
That's the summary. And I'd add one more thing, test your setup before you shoot something important. Record a 5-minute clip with your chosen app and settings, bring it into your editor, and confirm that it behaves. 5 minutes of testing saves 5 hours of fixing.
That's the kind of advice that sounds obvious, but nobody actually does it until they've been burned.
I have been burned. I have the scorch marks.
I want to dig into something you mentioned earlier about the Camera 2 API. What's actually happening at the software level that makes the stock camera app produce VFR, while a pro app can produce CFR? Isn't it all going through the same hardware?
It is the same hardware, but the software path is different. The stock camera app on most Android phones uses what's called the high-level camera, API, which abstracts away a lot of the control. The app says, give me 4K at 30 frames per second, and the system handles the rest, but the system is also juggling a dozen other priorities. Exposure adjustment, face detection, scene optimization, HDR merging. All of that processing introduces variable latency, and the system compensates by allowing frame timing to drift.
The stock app is basically a black box with a good enough guarantee.
The Camera 2 API, which Google introduced back in Android 5, gives developers much finer control. An app using Camera 2 can lock the exposure, lock the white balance, disable stabilization, and request frames on a strict schedule. It can also query the actual timestamp of each frame as it arrives, which is how those pro apps give you real-time frame rate feedback.
This has been available since Android 5. That's ancient in phone years.
Android 5 Lollipop released in 2014. The capability has been there for over a decade, but most users never touch it because the apps that expose it are niche and the stock camera is good enough for casual use. The VFR problem persists not because it's technically unsolvable, but because the default experience is optimized for point-and-shoot convenience, not editorial cleanliness.
Which is a reasonable design choice. Most people shooting video on their phone are not importing it into a multi-track timeline. They're trimming it in the Photos app and posting it.
For that use case, VFR is completely fine. The phone's own editing tools are designed to handle it. The problem only emerges when you try to use phone footage in a professional editing environment, which is a relatively niche thing to do, but it's a niche that includes a lot of people who listen to this show.
We are a niche podcast for niche people, and we're fine with that. Let's talk about the file size problem from a different angle. One of the complaints in the prompt is that transcoding produces significantly larger files, which makes quick editing harder. Is there a world where storage just gets fast and cheap enough that this stops mattering?
Storage is already fast and cheap enough for most people. A 2TB external SSD costs under $200 and can sustain speeds that make ProRes editing trivial. The bottleneck is more psychological than technical. People don't want to manage external drives. They want to edit off their phone's internal storage or their laptop's SSD, and those fill up fast when you're working with intermediate codecs.
The real solution is just accepting that video work requires external storage, same as it always has. Phones didn't change that. They just made it easier to pretend it wasn't true.
Video has always been storage hungry. The phone's internal compression hides that by producing deceptively small files. But the moment you need to actually edit those files in a real editor, the deception falls apart. You're forced to confront the fact that video data is enormous, and editing requires access to every frame instantly on demand.
The phone is lying to you about how much data you actually have, and the lie is convenient right up until it isn't.
It's the same lie that streaming services tell you about how much bandwidth you have. Everything works great until you look under the hood.
All right, I want to circle back to something practical. If someone is using one of these pro apps and they see the frame rate starting to drift because of thermal throttling, what are the actual interventions, besides the ice pack?
Lower the resolution. Dropping from 4K to 1080p reduces the processing load dramatically, and for a lot of use cases, 1080p is perfectly adequate. Lower the frame rate. If you're shooting 60 frames per second for slow motion, but you don't actually need slow motion, drop to 30 or 24. Turn off stabilization if you're on a tripod. Close every other app. Put the phone in airplane mode to prevent background processes from waking up the radios.
Airplane mode is an underrated production tool.
It really is. A notification arriving mid-recording can cause a frame timing hiccup on some phones. It shouldn't, but it does.
What about the battery optimization settings that Android has? The ones that throttle performance to save power?
Turn them off. Most phones have some kind of performance mode or high performance setting buried in the battery menu. Enable that before a shoot. It's not a magic fix. The phone will still thermal throttle if it gets too hot, but it prevents the software from preemptively reducing performance to save battery.
You're trading battery life for consistency, which is the right trade for a planned shoot.
Bring a battery pack. If you're shooting for more than an hour, you'll need it anyway.
This is all starting to sound like actual production planning, which is probably the real answer to the prompt. The way to get predictable frame rate from a phone is to treat the phone like a camera, not like a phone.
That's the insight. The phone is capable of good results, but you have to meet it halfway. Use the right app, configure it properly, monitor it during the shoot, manage heat and battery, and have a post-production plan for the footage. If you do all of that, you can get results that are hard to distinguish from a dedicated camera in good light.
If you don't want to do any of that, accept that you're going to see the transcoding dialogue and plan your afternoon accordingly.
The transcoding dialogue is the price of convenience.
I have one more question about RAW, and it's maybe a dumb one. If phone sensors are so small and noisy, why do RAW photos from phones look so much better than RAW video? Is it just that photos get more processing time?
That's a big part of it. With a RAW photo, the phone can spend several seconds capturing and processing. Modern phones use computational techniques like multi-frame stacking. They capture multiple exposures in rapid succession and merge them to reduce noise and increase dynamic range. That's how night mode works. With video, you don't have that luxury. You have to deliver frames on a strict schedule, so the stacking and merging that makes phone photos look great isn't available.
The phone's photo prowess creates unrealistic expectations for what it can do in video.
People see a stunning RAW photo from their phone and think, I want that quality in video. But the physics and processing constraints are completely different. Video is a real-time pipeline. Photos are a burst pipeline with post-processing. They're not the same thing, even though they come from the same sensor.
That's a useful distinction. The sensor is the same, but the temporal budget is not.
Time is the resource that video doesn't have. Every frame has to be delivered in 1/30th of a second or faster. That's an incredibly tight window for computational photography.
Which makes me appreciate what phones actually achieve in video mode. Given the constraints, it's kind of remarkable that the footage looks as good as it does.
The engineering that goes into phone video processing is extraordinary. We complain about VFR and compression artifacts, but the fact that a device in your pocket can produce watchable 4K video at all is astonishing if you think about what's actually happening at the silicon level.
The miracle is that it works. The curse is that it almost works.
That's the title of this episode right there.
The miracle and the curse of phone video. I'll allow it. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early medieval period, the Moriori people of the Chatham Islands inadvertently cultivated vast underground fungal mycelial networks by burying fermented karaka berries in collective storage pits. The unintended consequence was soil so densely threaded with mycelium that early European explorers reported the ground felt, quote, spongy and alive, underfoot, which they attributed to swamp gas rather than a millennium of fungal agriculture.
Spongy and alive, that's going to sit with me. Here's the forward-looking thought I want to leave people with. Phone cameras keep getting better. The sensors get slightly larger. The processors get more efficient. The software gets smarter. The VFR problem is probably solvable at the OS level if Google or Apple decide it's worth solving. The question is whether they'll bother, or whether they'll continue to treat video as a consumer feature rather than a production tool. If the latter, the pro apps and the workarounds we've talked about are going to remain relevant for a long time.
My bet is that the gap between consumer video and production video will narrow but not close. The physics of small sensors and the constraints of real-time processing mean there will always be some compromise. The people who care about frame rate accuracy will always need to reach for tools that give them control. The good news is, those tools exist, and they're getting better.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the fact and the infrastructure. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
More or less on schedule.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.